Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal. And I am joined by longtime basketball and football beat reporter Jim Polzine, now our columnist. And we've got quite the game here, Jim. This is a big game, number 18 Wisconsin, going to Chicago to take on Notre Dame, number 12 Notre Dame at Soldier Field. This is a big one. You can kind of tell, like, there's a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, a lot of... I don't know. Is it nervous energy? I'm trying to gauge what I see online and what I've talked to a few people around town. It's like people are really like, this is a make or break type of game. You don't like hearing that in week three, but that's really what it is.
Yeah, I mean, not this early in the season does that happen very often. But we were talking before the show. They've already wasted one opportunity for a signature win. Here's another one staring them in the face, and you know, at some point you got to get it done, right?
Yeah. And it's funny because it kind of goes back to something that you asked Jim Leonard at the media day. It was about, you know, taking that next step as Wisconsin. And he said it pretty flatly, like, we're done, you know, having a good effort in big games and then just coming up short. Like, we've got to win. And he's right. They already blew one chance, like you said, and now it's you got to do it in a neutral site, which, you know, we can read on Madison.com right now. It sounds like it's going to be a little more Notre Dame leaning than Wisconsin, which doesn't surprise me given that Chicago area and everything. But it's a big game, and we're going to break it all down. We've got a lot of information here in the show coming for you. We're going to go through the offense, some of the things that they've got to do to have success against Notre Dame. Really, the big one that we're going to talk a lot about is dealing with Kyle Hamilton, who I've watched a ton of tape, and I wrote a story about him this week. You can read on Madison.com, but this guy is unreal. He is the best defensive player Wisconsin's going to see all year unless they get to like a New Year's Six bowl game or something like that. He's that good. And then we're also going to talk about the defense, some of the things that they've got to do to have success against Notre Dame, and we think at least big boost getting Leo Chanel back after a couple of games off after his COVID diagnosis. So big boost for the defense there. And then we'll talk really quickly about 11 a.m. kickoffs because, you know, one more got announced, the Michigan at Wisconsin games, 11 a.m. kickoff. So we'll talk about those, and then we'll do our picks. Cooled off a little bit, but we are still way ahead this year, Jim. So we got a lot of stuff coming for you. We'll be right back after this. All right, Jim, let's jump in with this offense because you and I have talked a lot about the offense and some of the mistakes and some of the things that they're not doing well right now. Go back and listen to last week. We talked a lot about pre-snap motion and the things that we think are going to be a little bit more prevalent this week. But when I look at this game, it starts with how does Wisconsin account for a guy like Kyle Hamilton, Notre Dame safety, because he's going to play everywhere. He's going to be in the box. He's going to play deep. He's going to play in the slot, which is a really big deal for Wisconsin because they've been putting Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor in the slot a lot more, two of their best receivers, and then maybe he's in the slot against Jake Ferguson. I mean, how do you think they go about trying to address what he does?
Yeah, it was interesting yesterday. Paul Christ was saying, you know, you don't want to pay too much attention to one guy because, you know, there's 10 other guys out there on the field. But you really have to. You have to know where he is every play. The one thing that stood up when I was watching him is just how much ground he can cover quickly.
It's insane.
It is. It's and for a guy his size, too, that's the thing.
6'4", 220, sprinting all over the place.
He roams all over the place. I mean, I saw one mock draft this week, has him as a top five.
Yeah.
Right, and maybe, you know, he might go one or two, depending on, like, because it's not a good quarterback crop this year.
Yeah, and safety is a position that you can debate, but, yeah,
right.
Talent-wise, he's right.
Absolutely,
there.
Absolutely, yeah, and if a guy like that can make an impact, you certainly, you know, you want to get him early. You have to account for him, and you know, there's been a lot of outcry about, hey, let's throw the ball deeper. You got to be careful this week with him because he will go and get it. He covers a lot of ground, like I said. He will clearly be the best player on the field, I think.
Yeah, no question on that one. And the thing to me that is really difficult as an offense is this isn't like a defensive lineman where you can shift. Like, even when they played Chase Young, they did a lot better against him in the Big Ten championship game a couple years ago than they did in the regular season. They can put tight ends to chip him. You can do things to a defensive lineman. Even a linebacker where they've got a little more free space, you can get somebody up to him in your schemes. it's really tough to account for a safety. And then the way that they move him around, you know, there will be plays where on the outside zone, the left tackle's got to get out to the slot and block him. And that's not an easy task. No. Yeah, the left Tyler Beach will have size on him, but he Kyle Hamilton's so crazy quick and just explosive. It's going to be a real test. And the thing that I think Notre Dame has done well when they need to, like when their defense has had some tough spots and late in games, as we've seen, all three of their games have been really close. But what they do is when they get down to it, they just say, we're putting Kyle Hamilton somewhere where we think the ball is going, whether it's your best player, whether it's the area of the field that you're going to a bunch. Like, we're just putting Kyle Hamilton there, and you've got to beat us with option B or C. And let's just be frank here. Wisconsin hasn't had an option B or C throughout the first 2 weeks. It's been run the ball, hope Danny Davis makes a really nice catch. That's got to change. And we'll talk about it more in a second here, but there's not a ton you can do scheme-wise to account for a safety like that. And like you said, when you're trying to kickstart your offense with some big plays, this is a guy that can be 10 to 15 yards off the ball and then just sprint to wherever he needs to and break that up or pick it off even.
Don't you love that? I mean, you see that on offense all the time where guys, where they drop schemes to get their best players in position to get the ball. It's so interesting to see on the other side of the ball.
It is.
Just, you know, the ability to do that. And that's what makes him good. That's what, you know, that's what makes them good. I'm interested to see him. I know Scott Nelson, you know, I asked Scott Nelson about him yesterday, and, you know, Wisconsin defensive guys aren't going to watch a ton of Notre Dame defensive film, right?
Right.
Because they're getting ready for Notre Dame offense. He loves watching Kyle Hamilton. He said he watched the other day, he basically watched football from 11 to 8 and had a hard time taking his eyes off Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I'm sure if you're a safety, you're kind of like, man, I wish I could play like that. Not just because he's so talented, but I wish my defensive coordinator just said, hey, roam around, make stuff happen. Because if you watch what Notre Dame does on defense, the other 10 guys are kind of playing off of him. He's like the catch-all center fielder, like in baseball, where your two corner guys are going to play off the fact that that guy's covering all this ground. Notre Dame does that a lot because, personally, and I'm not trying to, you know, bash on Notre Dame here because I think they're a good team, but rest of the defense-wise, they're not a ton of talent.
Right.
Like I truly do believe up front Wisconsin's got the advantage. We're going to talk about their best defensive lineman in a second, but I truly think that up front Wisconsin has the advantage, and then they have solid corners, but I wouldn't say they're great. Like, Davis, Pryor, DK should be able to make some things happen. Just this X factor of Kyle Hamilton, wherever he's at, like, that's what Notre Dame wants, though. That's what they're trying to set up. They're trying to set up, you have to go away from wherever he's at, and then they can overload the other side. So it's going to be a really interesting chess match because, as you mentioned, Paul Chris said you don't want to pay too much attention to one guy, but when it's this type of guy, and Notre Dame's whole defense is built around him, you kind of have to.
I think one thing, and Mertz addressed this yesterday, was he did a better job spreading the ball around, which I think is a good thing, right? I mean, this offense doesn't have to rely on one or two guys. I think there's the Kendrick Pryors, the DKs of the world. And I think Mertz is going to have to do that on Saturdays. Use all of his options. Don't get too reliant on Jake Ferguson and or Danny Davis. He's going to have to spread the ball around.
Yeah, for sure. And for Mertz to do that, he's got to be protected, as we've seen throughout, you know, this year and even last season. When he's protected, he's a lot better than when he's under pressure. And the big thing for protecting him this week is keeping Myron Tungavailoa-Amosa.
Nice.
Nailed that. Keeping him off of Mertz's back because this is a really, really talented defensive end. And a bigger type of body than what we've seen in the last few years, like when you look at what Wisconsin's done against, you know, the Ohio States with the Bosa's twin or the Bosa's brothers, Chase Young, some George Karloftis over at Purdue, they've done a lot of good things with the quicker, smaller type of defensive ends, where they're not as the big body isn't as crucial to their game, and they win a lot more with speed. Then, you know, when you're set up for the speed, then they beat you with power. Tungavailoa-Amosa just comes at with you with power. He is a big dude, and really that's a challenge on the edge because you're so used to, you know, taking those bucket steps and taking the steps toward the outside. When you've got that big of a body, you've got to go straight at him. The angle steps are a little tougher to do. I'm really fascinated in that matchup with Logan Bruss, Tyler Beach. Even the tight ends are going to have to help out there, too, on the run plays. That's something that, as long as they can get him off the line, I think they've got the advantage offensively. But he's a type of guy that could be a game wrecker if you let him be.
Yeah, and we saw Tyler Beach struggle in week one a little bit. You know, he missed a lot of camp. I think that was part of it. I think there was a rust factor and just a lack of reps. But it's going to be a big test for him, and that's, you know, that's one area that I don't know that we've seen them be great at, right? And so I definitely another matchup we're going to have to keep an eye on, because I think, you know, that's one area that Notre Dame could take advantage of.
Yeah, and it's another tough part for Paul Chris as a play caller, because you've got to – I'm sure one part of his mind says, I have two senior tackles that I trust a lot, right? I'm going to get my running backs, I'm going to get my tight ends out in the route to challenge the defense that way. And then when you have a game like Penn State where the protection's not there, and Eastern Michigan was a lot better, but, you know, a big scale down on the opponent there, it's got to be a tough balancing act for him, because for the route and the pass concepts to be their best, you've got to get guys like Jake Ferguson, even Jack Eschenbach, if he plays, he's questionable right now, but you've got to get these running backs out in the pass routes, right? But then you're leaving it 5-on-5 up right. front, or 4-on-5 up front, and that's been dicey. So I do wonder what Paul Chris kind of has up his sleeve for that, because the two things that we've seen throughout the year, and we talked about last week how the game plan was so vanilla against Eastern Michigan, but the two position or personnel groupings that they're using the most are 11 with three wide receivers or 12 with two tight ends. So those are the two groups that you're going to see the most. Like, you're not going to just see out of nowhere spread 4 and 5 wide receivers from this group. So how those guys on the edge help out with the pass rush, keep Graham Mertz protected, because that's so huge for this game. He's already got – Graham Mertz has enough to deal with the fact of Kyle Hamilton, the way that they run their defense, trying to get him toward the ball. You can't – if you add down the pressure, like, you can't expect much success, in my opinion.
Right. I mean, that's a worst-case scenario because, like you said – Mertz just has so much. He's got not only personnel standpoint for Notre Dame to worry about, but he's got himself to worry about. He's got to play better. He's got to be more in rhythm. And if he's under pressure, we've seen him struggle at times under pressure. So a clean pocket most of the time would be certainly something you want for Wisconsin and something they need to have.
Yeah, and when you – we go through that press conference on Monday with the players, and I would say every other question, maybe every third question, was about Jack Cohn and then this matchup. And, you know, that's part of the storyline this week. And every player that I talked to said they knew that it was coming and have kind of had their answers ready for all this. And it's funny because they have no ill will toward Jack Cohn. It seems like there's still a ton of guys on this team that are pretty close with them and talk with them frequently. And, you know, talking with Graham Mertz, I don't think he's one of those guys. I think they're friendly. I don't think they're super tight. But at the end of the day, Mertz, Cohn, everybody around this game knows that it's going to be judged in that way. It's going to be framed as this quarterback who replaced the other one going against each other. And talking with Graham Mertz yesterday or on Monday, you could tell there's a frustration. There's a, I want to play better. Like, I want to step up for this team. I want to play better. But then there's also that mindset. It's like, I can't screw up this game. Right. There is just a very real factor. It's like, this is a game where I've got to be at my best and not make the mistakes that have been hurting us.
Well, there's a ton of pressure on him. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and there has been for a while, but this game certainly gets ramped up. He's got to play well. It's not a Graham Mertz versus Jack Cohn thing, just like Paul Chris said, because they're not even on the field at the same time. But it is. It's still
but it is at the same time.
No matter what, you're going to be looking at stat lines. You're going to be looking at how those guys play. And it's a crucial game. I mean, if Cohn plays well and Mertz doesn't play well, the obvious storyline is that Paul Chris made the wrong decision last fall.
Right.
When he decided to stick with Graham Mertz after Jack Cohn came back healthy. It's just how it is. There's no way to avoid that. And so that puts a lot of weight on Graham Mertz's shoulders. And you know, I think the bye week helps, right?
You would think. I mean, the increased film study, just in the way that Graham Mertz described it, was just cleaning things up that he's seen from himself, some of the techniques of some of the footwork stuff. I mean, that seems to be his two big things that he always says he tries to improve. But I think having that bye week, having more time to just really dial in, here are like the five things that we're going to try to attack on this defense, we think we have the advantage on, and then just rep those out, that's got to help. That's got to be a factor.
Yeah, like you said, too, like just going back, and I think Graham said this the night of the Eastern Michigan game, is using these 2 weeks to just go back and review the first 2 weeks and find out what areas need to improve, find out where he can get better. Just, you know, it's like you've had two games, and just go back and look at them and see what you did wrong, what you did right, and where you can get, where you can take a step forward.
And the toughest thing for me, for when you looked at how Graham Mertz has played, and we talked about it a little bit last week, the poise in the pocket hasn't been there, the mistakes with some of the ball locations hasn't been there. The thing to me that is so tough, and I just can't imagine the internal struggle there, because Graham Mertz is a confident dude. We all know that about him. He wants to play better. He probably says to himself, you know what, here's a play. We have a deep shot. Like, Danny Davis is going deep, let's just say. If he says to himself, hey, I'm just going to get it to him, I'm just going to throw it deep, that's when he's going to get in trouble.
Right.
You know, it's like it's such a struggle where, because he wants to get some deep shots going. He wants to get this offense clicking in that way. But if he tries to force it, then it's going to be worse. It's going to put the defense in bad spots. It's probably going to be a turnover. It's got to be just such a tough, you know, back and forth in your head. Like, got to stay patient, but man, I want to make a play.
It's funny because this exact topic was being talked about last week up in Green Bay when I was up there, in that Devontae Adams didn't feel like he had enough targets in week one. And he and Aaron Rodgers had a talk about kind of, you know, don't be afraid to, I don't think the word forced was used, but 50-50 balls, I like my chances.
Sure.
Give me a chance. And I'm sure Aaron Rodgers likes his chance. And Aaron Rodgers knows where to put the ball where it's not probably a true 50-50, right?
Right.
But that's also Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams.
Yeah,
right?
Two, like, of the best of their position.
Right. Graham Mertz can't think like that. And you're right. Like, and that's why I know a lot of fans are frustrated about the lack of downfield throws, but I totally agree that you can't force the issue. You can't throw it up just to throw it up and let your guys make a play, in part because I don't know if they have the guys that are going to go make the play in 50-50 situations. So it's tough. You've got to pick your spots. And would I like to see them throw the ball down the field more? Yes. But it's got to be in the right situation.
I'm totally with you. And the thing that I think is the most challenging, if you're Graham Mertz in this offense, is that when you've had the deep chances, it's always something, right? Like, yeah. they've hit a deep one somewhat, you know, 20-ish, 25 yards to Pryor in the back of the end zone against Eastern Michigan. He dropped it. They had that touchdown that got called back after Graham made a really nice move in the pocket, delivered the ball. And then a couple of times against Penn State, they had a deep shot called. It was open to our knowledge, and the protection wasn't there.
Yeah.
That type of just always seems to be something. You've got to eventually figure it out.
Right.
And it's tough to say, hey, figure it out against a good defense and against a good team.
Yeah.
But that's really the challenge of this week. Like, you say these things are there and it's possible. You've got to make them happen, because I don't think Wisconsin's going to get away with what we've talked about for so many times, these 14, 15-play drives against Notre Dame. Like, some of them may work. Like, you might have one or two of those in a game, but you can't rely on that every single time you have the ball. You've got to make a chunk happen. And then, you know, we always talk about complementary football in the terms of, like, defense setting up the offense maybe with a turnover, or a special team setting up the defense right. The offense has to do their kind of complementary end of it by giving the defense a lead.
Right.
You know, outside of the Eastern Michigan game, how many minutes has Wisconsin's defense played with a lead in the last year and a half? Hasn't been a ton.
No, good point.
So I just think you've got to, if you're the offense, your mindset's got to be play complementary football in the sense of, like, make sure that you cash in on those red zone opportunities. Even if it's field goals, get points. Make it a little bit easier on the defense, because we've seen it throughout the years with Jim Leonard. The defense changes when they have a lead. If they're up 7-10, they can be a lot more aggressive and make some of those things happen when they have a lead, as opposed to we are playing to preserve a tie or to preserve a 3-point lead.
Right. Speaking of complementary football too, I'd like to see the running game get going to the point where you can do play action stuff off it. You know, I don't know that we've seen enough of that, and not because the running game hasn't been solid. I think it has been, but I don't know. Like, every week I get asked, like, when is this offense going to be more creative? It's so boring. I do want to see if Paul Chryst has anything up his sleeve for this one, especially with 2 weeks to prepare. You would have to think this one's important to him.
Yes.
The reasons he's not ever going to admit. But I just think it's time to see what this offense can do. Because yeah. I do think they have, I think they have the parts for the most part. So let's see this unit improve.
For sure. We'll talk about this a lot, I'm sure, next week and kind of review it and see where we're at. But let's move on to the defense here, Jim, because when I watched Notre Dame, I watched their Purdue game on Saturday, and then I went back and watched in full their game against Toledo. The big thing that stands out is where Jack Cohn and Tyler Buchner want to get the ball is over the middle of the field to Michael Mayer. That's where it's that, and then when you try to take that away, it's go deep, right? That seems to be the A and B of their offense. Like, we're going to pepper Michael Mayer. He's going to make some big plays, and then when you try to stop that, then we're going to open up the deep shots. Wisconsin's been elite. You're going to see a story on Madison.com this week. Elite at taking away 0 to 20 yards over the middle of the field, which when you do all the math, it's basically about 40% of the field. And the defense forces you to get to the edge, block the linebackers, which is tough, block the D-backs, break tackles and make plays on the outside, or beat them deep. So it adds the difficulty of the deep throw and getting the catch. I think that's just a really fascinating strength-on-strength matchup here because Michael Mayer is a really good tight end, but we've seen throughout the years, you get pressure in Jack Cohn's face, he'll put one up, he'll give a defense a chance at one. So I think that's going to be something that middle of the field, how Wisconsin deals with Michael Mayer, Kyron Williams coming out of the backfield or playing in the slot sometimes as a receiver. It's a really fascinating matchup, especially with those two guys in that area of the field.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting yesterday was Jim Leonard said like they'll really scheme those guys in terms of they'll line them up over the field. They're going to make you look for them. And it's not often that Jake Ferguson is going to go into a game as not being the best tight end.
Yep.
Right? But this will be one of them. I mean, Mayer's good. He's really, really good. Scott Nelson was talking about him, how he's not necessarily speedy, but very good once he gets the ball at eluding people. So he's a playmaker at that position. You know, we've seen that. That tight end position has kind of evolved over the last 5-10 years, and he's one of the better ones.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a huge test for Nelson and the other safeties.
Yeah.
I mentioned Travion Blaylock last week as a guy that might be getting some more playing time because of this matchup and just trying to be that larger physical presence. And Colin Wilder is listed as questionable. He was number one on the depth chart. I don't know how much we want to trust the depth chart at this point, but he was listed as the number one. We'll see if he plays or not. But if not, like there's got to be somebody in that safety group outside of Scott Nelson that's able to step up and help take away that middle of the field because you know if you're Jim Leonard, you've got Leo Chanel who's probably chomping at the bit for the last 3 weeks to play, who wants to get after the quarterback, who wants to get in the backfield. You got to make sure you have that area of the field covered, and I think it's going to come down to a safety more often than not.
Yeah, I think you're right. What kind of impact do you think Chanel will have off the bat?
It's going to be fascinating because I don't think Notre Dame's interior line can handle him. And I think Jim Leonard does a really great job of occupying those guys with either, pressure in their face or somebody else, and then Chanel coming off a little bit of a delay so that Chanel gets one-on-one with a running back as opposed to an offensive lineman. But what we've seen from Chanel, not only in fall camp, but just going back to last season as a blitzer, there's not a lot of interior guys that are able to handle his blend of speed and power. So I think having that as an extra pass rusher, along with the issues that Notre Dame has at their tackle spots versus guys like Nick Herbig and Noah Burks, who's actually been playing really well, I think that's something that with Leo Chanel coming back, you've got to imagine Jim Leonard's got some things schemed up that, one, we haven't seen probably, and then, two, Notre Dame's not going to be ready for it, and especially with a healthy and rested Leo Chanel. Like, the one thing that I'll give the Notre Dame's interior linemen for, I'll give them credit for, is that they've been out there. That's something that their tackles can't say, that they've been beaten up at both spots. But I can't imagine after playing 3 straight weeks, it's going to be fun to take on a fully rested, ready-to-go Leo Chanel coming on a bunch of blitzes, because I think that's what they're going to do. Because let's say he's not in great cardio shape coming off of COVID, we don't know. We haven't been able to talk to him. But even if he's not in great cardio shape, 15, 20 blitzes, it's going to be a lot to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not like Jack Cohn's going to outrun you either, right?
Yes. I
mean, he'll make good the thing about Cohn is he'll make good, quick decisions. I think that's always been kind of one of his strengths. But they're gonna have to get to him, and I know we're going to get to it too, but they need to cause more turnovers. They need to force more turnovers. I think that's going to be crucial in this game.
Yeah, and we've talked to Jack Sanborn a little bit about it, that it's not just that turnovers are big for the defense, right? It's a huge impact play. It's all that stuff. It's just we've seen what Wisconsin's offense does grinding out clock. I mean, they're number one again in the nation with in clock management or in time of possession. Just the amount of plays, especially if the offense can score off of it, the amount of plays that it impacts having a turnover, giving Wisconsin's offense, let's say, 10 more plays right there and then putting them behind, it just changes what an offense can do. And we always hear about being one-dimensional on offense, right? Notre Dame's coming into the game somewhat one-dimensional, mm-hmm. especially with this run defense. Like, I wrote it, and you'll see it on Friday in our preview, but if I'm Notre Dame, I don't waste a bunch of downs trying to establish a run game. I know Kyron Williams is good, but I'm just going to get him the ball on the edge. I'm going to throw him bubble screens. I'm going to do things that give him the ball in space and don't try to beat my head against the wall against a really good front. Because
right.
you look, that's when Penn State got rolling, is when they just said, we're not running it in between the tackles. So I think if you're Notre Dame, you got to do that. And the other part when you get turnovers as a defense is, and you get a little bit of a lead there, you're going to make the offense impatient. And yes, Notre Dame does a really good job challenging you down the field, but they had to come back in these games because they haven't been able to run the ball well. They haven't been able to close out games. And if you have a lead on them, I mean, and you're not Toledo, like no offense Toledo, that was a really tough loss because you played better for the majority of that game.
Yeah.
But if you have a better defense than a Toledo and you get a lead on this team, I don't see a lot of easy ways for them to come back because it's going to have to be down the field, especially with what Wisconsin does defensively. So I just think that there's so much impact that these turnovers can have that we've seen the one, right? They got a turnover against Eastern Michigan. There are a few chances against Penn State they weren't able to do. But I think that you've got to get at least one, maybe not, if not two, here in this Notre Dame game to really just swing this game and give your offense all the extra chances it needs.
Especially early. You talked about that. I mean, if they can, I think it's the first 15 minutes of this game are so crucial. And it usually plays out that way. But I think this one in particular, I think this, if this defense can make an impact play early in the game, help out the offense, or the other way around, I just think it's so important for this team to get off to a good start.
Yeah. And we talked about it a few times, the last, like, you know, ranked type of games they played. I remember it was the first game I ever covered working here, that Michigan game in 2019. What does Paul Chryst do when they win the toss? He takes the ball,
yep.
Which is weird because of how good that defense was. But he just said, we've got to establish something. He goes for it on fourth down twice in that drive.
Yeah.
I think it's flipped this year. I think if they win the toss, they've got to throw the defense out there. They've got to pay left tackle, who's been terrible all year, whichever one of you, between the second and third guy from Notre Dame. Deal with this crowd noise. Deal with the Nick Herbig. Deal with Noah Burks. And then see if it works. You know, because I just think that the best way for this, or the most likely way for this team to get off to a hot start, is creating a turnover or a really quick three and out with a sack or something, and then giving the offense a time to get out there with momentum already kind of on their side.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do think that this comes down to the defense making two or three really impact plays, and you know, it's a shame that they have to do this on their own to some degree, but I think they're going to need to in this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to be close, and you can see our predictions when we get to our picks in a little bit, but I think it's going to be close. I think Wisconsin's got the advantage on both lines, and they know how to win with that when they have that. It's just going to be like a little bit like the Penn State game where you just can't let up those huge plays.
Right.
With Notre Dame's not a team that's going to be able to drive 15-ish plays down the field. They're not patient enough, one, and I just don't think they're good enough up front to do that. So I just that's really what it comes down to in this game for me is this defense getting off the field and then not allowing those big plays. So one last thing before we get to picks, Jim. Why do people hate 11 a.m. kicks off so much? Because this is one, right? We've already had the one with the Penn State game. We're going on to Chicago for another 11 a.m. kick. And then we got announced by the Big Ten that Michigan-Wisconsin next week is going to be another 11 a.m. kick, and people are not happy about it. You've lived here longer. You went to school here. I just want to know, like, why do people hate 11 a.m. kicks so much?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors. Students obviously don't like getting up earlier than they have to, right? But I don't know that what we're hearing is from the students. I will say this too, that people travel a long ways for this game. You know, there's people that in Eau Claire or Green Bay that have season tickets that don't want to get up at the crack of dawn and travel. I do think people like kind of easing into the 2:30 game, get down here, have some cocktails, and you know, just have an afternoon game and go from there. And I do think there's another segment that just wants night games because they feel like Wisconsin has a better chance to win at night because the atmosphere would be more rowdy, you know, as we know it can be at night. I guess my answer to that is be rowdy at 11 o'clock, right? Like,
we've seen it, right? Yeah, they just happened. Did it against right. Penn State. They yeah. did that Michigan game a couple years ago, like I was just talking about. I don't know if the rowdiness is a question for Wisconsin fans. I think they're pretty good about doing that. I don't know. Like, I think you're right. I think the season ticket holder that doesn't live in Madison, right, a couple hours away, and then wants to get tailgate, too, wants, like, the experience of going to a college football game, yeah. You're right. That day probably starts at 5 or 6 for them, and that's not awesome. So I'll give them that. I don't know. I just think that, one, I'm biased, I know, because it makes my job easier.
I was
going to
say, we are completely biased.
Yes, we are biased messengers here because it makes our jobs easier to be at 11 o'clock and not on deadline and things of that nature. But I just think that if you're Wisconsin, isn't there a bigger advantage in a home game like this, the Michigan game case and Penn State? Having it earlier, that team had to travel usually the day before, and then get up early again. Look, sometimes time change in these instances. I don't know. To me, I think there's more of an advantage for Wisconsin. Yes, it's an early game, but you're waking up in the hotel you're used to. And I don't know. I just think that there's more of an on-field advantage if you're the home team in the 11 a.m. game that fans maybe need to factor in a little bit with their complaints.
Right. I totally agree. And then the other thing is, like, and we say this all the time, but the reason for this is television, right?
Yeah.
Like, we are living in television's world, and that's why it is. Fox has, you know, they've got a pregame show. They want to lead into a big game, and these big games have created enormous ratings. Like
The Oregon Ohio State game a couple weeks ago was like the Fox's most watched college football game in like 3 years, which I believe like the last one was the Oklahoma at Ohio State game. I mean, that was a night game, but it's working. That's the thing. It's like people that are watching college football at home, which is what they're going for on the television audience, like, this is working, and it's not going away. I guess would be my warning for people that are complaining. I don't think this is changing anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. And you know, like, the other thing is, like, I got a question at Open Gym that's going to come out Wednesday, saying, well, Wisconsin should write into their contracts that, like, for the Alabama game coming up, that, hey, we want this to be a night game. I don't know that UW – take football out of this. I think UW likes early games because the crowd behavior, mm-hmm. and the neighborhood certainly likes
– Yes, neighborhood games, definitely, right? Yeah, which they are dealing with all the time.
Right, so they want to keep them happy. Police certainly, I think the earlier the better. So there's a lot of people that are on the side, including media, of 11 a.m. games. And I get fans – I totally get – I feel for the fan that has to, you know, travel really early and you know, has paid a lot of money for these tickets and wants an optimal time. I mean, like, I think a perfect world for me would be like the 1 p.m. game.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Those don't exist anymore.
Yeah. And just one last thought on this, Jim. I think college football has this very unique kind of – the atmosphere is more important than what, honestly, at the end of the day, what happens on the field. Because if – what happened on the field would matter. Nobody would come to games that aren't Alabama or Clemson, or right? Like, if you were just talking about winning, like, I understand that there's the community aspect of college football that really kind of overwhelms it. I just think that places that are special, like Wisconsin, I do think this is a really awesome atmosphere, and that's because of fans. They may deal with it. Right. And maybe the, like you said, 1 o'clock would be ideal. It's just, like you said, television is going to decide this, and if you're leading up into other games that start at 11, you've got the biggest one is Fox. Like, there you go. There's your recipe.
And UW's going to want to keep, and the Big Ten are going to want to keep their television partners happy.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. This is here to stay, and I'm sure we're going to be answering questions from this year after year after year.
Yeah. No, you're right. All right, Jim, let's jump into picks here. And sorry to bore you guys a little bit, but Jim and I see every game in the Big Ten this week the same, which is wild.
Yeah.
I will say that I cheated a slight bit because Jim is on fire with the Fightin' Bielemas, so I followed his pick on that one and didn't even make one. But I went 6-5 last week. Jim went 5-6. So for the season, Jim is 20-13-1, and I am 19-14-1. So just one behind, but still up quite a few units there if you were following along. All right, Jim, let's jump into these. As I said, we are on the same side of all of them. Bowling Green is going to Minnesota, and Minnesota is a 31-point favorite after shutting out Colorado, which I did not see. I thought Minnesota won that game, was going to win that game, but shutting out Colorado was a pretty impressive performance.
I had that completely wrong. You know, number one, you talked about this last week. Minnesota's offensive line is, you know,
it's real.
It's real. Yep, those guys are back. They're good. I was worried about Ibrahim getting injured, and they found a quality guy to replace him. And that defense is pretty good. I mean, I'm starting to become a believer in Minnesota, that they could be a legit Big Ten West contender.
Yeah, if Wisconsin doesn't figure some things out here on offense, I'm totally with you. They're a 31-point favorite here against Bowling Green. That seems like a ton of points.
It does, yeah.
But we're still both on Minnesota, and I just think that Bowling Green's not going to be able to score a ton. 42-7, 35-3, like, those are realistic scores, and that covers it. So that's kind of my thought process there.
Agree.
All right, so Ohio is going to Northwestern, and Northwestern is laying 15 points after getting pounded by Duke.
Yeah.
Don't look at that scoreboard and think that's how that game went. Duke was up 24-0, 30-10, or it was a disaster.
24-0 late in the first half, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a disaster for Northwestern. Yeah. They made it a little bit more respectable late in the game. Northwestern's a 15-point favorite here, and I hate it, but Ohio can't score.
Right.
Like, they just, the only team they scored against was, like, Duquesne's.
Duquesne.
I didn't know they had football.
I didn't either.
So, congrats to them for having football, but I just, yeah.
But they lost that game still, right?
I believe so. I think they scored, like, 16 or 26 points and lost. Oh. So, it's bad. So even though Northwestern is terrible, I would definitely not actually bet this game. But for the purposes of the podcast, we will say lay the 15 with Northwestern.
Yeah, my eyes jumped out of my head when I saw that spread. I said the same thing last week. Like, how can Northwestern be favored? But 15 points is a ton of points for this, for a team that has struggled a lot on offense, especially at quarterback. But I'm going to give the points.
Yeah. Hopefully Ryan Field magic happens a little bit. Ohio just can't do anything right. Colorado State, the Fighting John Budmeyers, are going to Iowa. Iowa is a 23-point favorite. Iowa just barely covered last week against, who did they play?
Kent State,
yeah, okay. I knew it was another MAC school. Iowa's, like I said, 23-point favorite for Iowa. I'm just going to take Iowa again because that defense is really good. Offense is not all that good.
No.
It keeps, like, if anybody likes to get mad about AP top 25 polls, that's why I have them at 10. Everybody else seems to have them much higher. I just think that this defense is good. Offense really doesn't impress me. And then, the Iowa State win is like Michigan beating up on a good Michigan State team. Iowa's big brother, always going to be.
They've owned that series.
They've owned that series, yeah. So that didn't sway me a ton. You know, I've been skewered about that a few times on Twitter, but I still stand by it. All that being said, I'm going to take Iowa to cover that points because Kinnick is a really hard place to play, and I don't think Colorado State's all that good this year.
Yeah, I agree. We're recording this on Tuesday, and right before I came in, I saw on Twitter that Kirk Ferentz said that today was their best offensive practice of the year. So he's optimistic about that side of the ball, and I think it's a really good team. I don't know where I would rank them. I don't know if they're legit. I've seen people that do Big Ten power rankings put Iowa number one.
Yeah, yikes.
Yeah, but
I just don't
see. They probably, from a resume standpoint.
Yeah, no, I agree. They have the best resume so far, but I just don't think when you're going through it and say who would win Penn State versus Iowa so far this year, I would go Penn State.
I would agree with you, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so we're both in Iowa there. Rutgers is going to Michigan. Michigan is laying 20 points to Rutgers, which I know Rutgers is beating up on some bad teams, but so is Michigan.
Right.
Michigan, yeah, we thought Washington was good. We thought that was going to be an awesome game. Washington stinks. Yeah. they cannot score. So I don't know. So we're both on Rutgers here because 20 is a ton of points.
Yeah, I hesitate a little bit because Rutgers had two players arrested.
Yeah, one of their best corners got suspended at least, but they were arrested for a paintball gun incident from what I saw.
Yes. But I'm sticking with, I still think that's so many points, too many points, and I'm just not, I don't believe in Michigan yet.
Not here either. And you never know if multiple-time special teams player of the week, Aaron Cruickshank, might do something again.
Exactly.
That guy is killing it this year.
Yeah.
Illinois going to Purdue. Purdue coming off that tough loss at Notre Dame, where they actually played really well. I was impressed by Purdue. But Purdue was laying 11 points, which I was stunned by because we do not know the status of wide receiver David Bell, who is the best player on Purdue, one of the best receivers in the Big Ten. Had a pretty nasty-looking concussion, head injury type of deal against Purdue or against Notre Dame late in that game. So with all that being said, we are both on Illinois plus the 11 points. That offense kind of scares me with Illinois, but at the same time, 11's a lot.
You know what? I was looking at some stats. Do you know who's number one in the Big Ten in pass efficiency? I know I throw out all these pass efficiency ratings every week. Do you know who's leading the Big Ten in pass efficiency?
Like team-wise?
Individual-wise. Jack Plummer.
Oh.
He's got 15 touchdowns and zero picks this year, which completely escaped
They
me.
Did play UConn.
They did, yeah. And he's played five games. I mean, but you take David Bell out of the equation, and I just think that's a completely different team.
Yeah, and Horvath. We don't know if he's playing yet. I saw a tweet that sounded like they were somewhat optimistic, but not landing, not committal yet.
I think they win that game, but I don't think they cover the 11.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, Kent State is going to Maryland. Maryland is laying 14.5. We're both on Maryland. I was a little underwhelmed with how Maryland played on Saturday.
I was too. Friday night, right?
That's Friday night, excuse me. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I was too. I mean, they've got a lot of weapons. I probably should have been a little bit skeptical of them going on the road. I think they're a little bit of a young team yet, and I'm not sure they're ready to win impressively in Big Ten road games yet. But I think this week they beat Kent State. It's like the Big Ten MAC challenge.
Yeah, it's weird. If they're not in a Big Ten game or, you know, Wisconsin playing a real team, it's kind of ugly this week. So we're both on Maryland there. Nebraska is going to Michigan State, who is now ranked, coming in after we thought they were going to be one of the bottom feeders in the Big Ten. What a start for Mel Tucker and Michigan State. Michigan State is favored by 5 points. That's not enough in our opinion. We're both going to take Michigan State. I just think touchdowns are a pretty easy number to hit against Nebraska. And I'll give Nebraska credit. They hung and they played about as well as you can expect them to at Oklahoma. But I just that offense just has got to be so frustrating if you're a Nebraska fan. Because it's like flashes of brilliance, terrible. Like, do something really well, hold the next play, it's first and 20, doesn't matter.
Did you see this series early in the game where four of their offensive linemen
had a penalty?
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, like, and it just, I will say this. I kind of expected them to implode after, like, they were already in the process of imploding. I thought it was going to get ugly. Mm-hmm. And they, like you said, they hung tough. They actually played well. I think morale victories at that point of the program for him are not something you want to, you know, cling on to, but I do think they can come out of that with some sort of positive vibe that they went down there and played a really good team well.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, but I think Michigan State's going to have a crazy crowd for that game because, number one, Nebraska always travels, we know that, but then Nebraska coming off that road win at Miami, which I did not see coming. No. I thought they were going to play well, but I just didn't think they were going to be able to take them down, and they crushed them. That game was not close.
Yeah.
So we're going to take Michigan State there, and that's a game that I'm honestly kind of like, whew, good for Wisconsin not having them on the schedule.
Yeah, who would have thought that, right?
I mean, exactly. Yeah. All right, so Akron is going to Ohio State. Ohio State is a 49-point favorite. And I'm holding my nose as I pick this, but I'm going to take Akron because expecting 50 points to none for Akron with how bad this Ohio State defense is playing and all the turmoil, that's what I just can't understand. Ryan Day, if you hate Kerry Combs so much, just fire him, which is fine. He's not doing a good job. There's objective reasons for firing. But don't keep him on staff, take away his play calling, and just like emasculate him every time you get asked about defense.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And I keep waiting for this breakout Ohio State performance where they look like the team we thought they might be. And it hasn't happened. Like week after week after week, it hasn't happened.
Yeah, if you're Chris Olave, you've got to be really upset that you're back. Because I think he would have been either a late first rounder or early second rounder last year. And I also think that I don't think that he expected CJ Stroud to struggle this much. And the worst part about it is, like, yeah, they've had some inconsistencies in the run game, but they're running it well enough with the explosive plays especially. It's like it takes CJ Stroud a quarter and a half to not sail every throw. And yeah, to me, that's, you can't lay 49 points with that type of team.
Yeah.
And even though Akron's not good either. But all right, Indiana is going to Western Kentucky, which is probably the weirdest thing about this schedule.
Yeah.
How do you schedule a home and home?
This has to be something that was scheduled, like,
pre-Indiana
being good, right? I mean, these schedules are made out so far in advance. But still, man, what a weird look for Indiana to schedule this home and home with Western Kentucky.
Yeah, real bizarre. They're a 9-point favorite at Western Kentucky. Ton of talk about benching Michael Penix.
Yeah.
And I know Sam Tuttle played, what's his name?
Jack Tuttle.
Jack Tuttle, excuse me. I think Sam Tuttle is from a movie. Anyways, Jack Tuttle played pretty well last year, but there's a lot of talk about benching Michael Penix. I don't think it's going to happen unless he struggles again. And I really even wouldn't say he struggled against Cincinnati. They were up 14-0 that game. But regardless, we're both going to take Indiana -9. Western Kentucky's just not at Big Ten level.
Yeah, Penix, he makes a couple of silly mistakes each game, and that was the frustrating part last year. They were in that game. I mean, they were in that. I think they led.
Oh yeah, they're up 14-0, and
yeah,
they
led in the second half too, though, right? I mean, like it was.
Yeah, yeah, early in the second half.
I was flipping
half.
Around, and all of a sudden I turned back on, and Cincinnati was in control. But I expect it to be way better.
Yeah, once Michael McFadden went out with the targeting call, that game completely flipped. And if you're being frank about it, thankfully, I mean, it was a bad targeting call, but. Thankfully for Indiana, it happened in the first half, and he doesn't have to sit out this game.
Right.
So, all right, we're both on Indiana there. And now we're to the main event here, the best game in the Big Ten this week, and really one of the best games in college football across the board. Notre Dame going to Chicago with Wisconsin to play the Badgers. The Badgers are a 6-point favorite, and I think this is the first time in, like, I think since the Iowa game last year that I'm taking the points against Wisconsin. And we are both on Notre Dame. 6 is too much. I can't trust this offense to either get a lead and expand it, or score enough to get a touchdown ahead. It's just too much.
So we agree on this game, except for we also disagree. You think that Wisconsin's going to win?
I do think Wisconsin wins this game. I think this defense is too good, and Notre Dame, even though you can say Penn State was too big play reliant, and they beat Wisconsin, I think they learned the lessons from that. And then I just think that Notre Dame doesn't have the ability to move the ball down the field, methodically. That's really how you have to beat this Wisconsin team.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it from kind of a holistic standpoint. I don't trust Wisconsin against a really good team yet. I don't trust Wisconsin to win a close game yet until they prove it to me.
Sure.
And maybe they shove that down my throat and prove me wrong. I just think it's going to be low scoring, 16-13-ish, and I think Notre Dame's going to win.
Sure. If you're actually betting, which, not legal here in Wisconsin, right. But if you're actually betting, the under or the over-under was at, 46. The unders in Wisconsin games are 6 of the last 9 and 4 of the last 4, so
wow.
You might want to jump on that one.
Yeah. That does seem like a lot of points. Unless, going back to one of our original conversations was, if defenses start scoring points.
Yeah, then you're...
Then it's, yeah.
Exactly. No, you're right there. But we are both going to take Notre Dame plus the 6. I'm excited. This is going to be a fun week. I mean, it's going to be a lot of work, but I think it's going to be fun. I think that's going to be a really cool atmosphere. And I know our coworker Abby is writing a story about all the Illinois and Chicago area guys getting to play in Soldier Field, a lot of them for the first time, because they don't play state football at Soldier Field down in Illinois. They usually do it at University of Illinois. So, cool story there. Make sure you're checking out Madison.com. Make sure you guys are getting signed up there. $1 for 6 months. Another, I think it's, I just was told there's another week or so of that deal. So, you can get signed up for $1, 6 months of coverage. Get you through football season, a bowl game, basketball season, hockey season. Tons of great stuff coming up. So, make sure you're getting signed up there. Read Jim's Open Gym column, and then later in the weekend, make sure you're checking out Jim's Ryder Cup coverage. He's going to be down there for a day or two and checking that out while also covering the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game, while also covering the Packer game. It's going to be quite the weekend for old Jim.
Yeah, a lot of different datelines this week. Green Bay, Haven, and Chicago.
For sure. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back next week.